Carrie called me on Monday and said, "Aaron, Danny's wife died." I said, "Danny's wife? Danny Erickson's wife died." And I sat there thinking, and here was Danny Erickson and I went to Bible college together, known him for years, and we go hunting and fishing together, and it just didn't process in my mind. I was going like, "What? Are you kidding me?" He goes, "No, she just died." And it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 3, 4, 4 o'clock when she called and told me about that. And so a friend of mine had called and left a message with Carrie, and so I called him back, and I ran home, got ready, and then we ran up to go be with my friend Danny. Danny is 43 years old, and his wife Lisa passed away in her sleep in the morning. Danny got up at 3:30 to go to work and gave his wife a kiss goodbye, and she was fine at that time. And he left for the day, and the 16-year-old, Dylan, got up and got ready for school like he does every morning, and he popped in and looked at his mom laying there and thought, "Oh, it must have been her mom's day off. She's sleeping. I don't want to wake her up to say goodbye to her." And so he left. She was laying on her stomach on her bed, and then little Blake got up in the morning. He's 12 years old, and he can get ready by himself for school as well, because sometimes his mom works, and he happened to walk by her bedroom and looked in, and there her mom was laying there, and so mom must have a day off today, and so he didn't go and wake her up and say goodbye, like she normally does during the morning, and so he left as well. And so Danny got done at about 12, or about 1 o'clock, 1:30 is when he came home, and he walked into the house, and he heard Lisa's phone alarm going off, and so he walked upstairs into her bedroom, and she was laying there kind of flat on the bed, and first thing he thought was, "That's kind of unusual. She doesn't usually lay on her stomach, but whatever." And so she picked up the phone, was on the floor, and so he picked up the phone. Evidently, she came home and was just taking a nap, and so she hadn't woken up yet, so he's going to shut the alarm off and notice that the alarm said 7:30 a.m., and then he kind of looked at that, and then he looked at her, and then it processed. He kind of watched her, and she wasn't breathing. And so he shook her and turned her over, and here, rigor mortis had already set in, so blood was pooling in her face and in her stomach. She was gone. And, of course, called the ambulance, and then he started calling friends, and that was 2 o'clock. That's when your week changes in a moment. 43 years old, no known health issues, and she's gone. That really changes your outlook on life. We went up and spent time with them on Monday, Tuesday, so that was our week, trying to get ready for that. And Carrie and I went up on Friday and spent the day with them yesterday at their funeral. And I thought how ironic that we're talking about pain and suffering. I didn't want God to give me illustrations like that. But what do you do when everything closes in and all of a sudden you're dealt the reality that things aren't the way they used to be? And how do you deal with that? You know, Danny's grew up in a church. His dad is a minister. His brother is a minister. His sister works very much in the church. In fact, when the morticians called and they asked if they wanted any chaplain to come out, and he says, "My goodness, I got 15 preachers on their way to come and see me right now." There was 5 or 6 of us, and we all went to Bible college together, and some of us went into the ministry, and some of them didn't. But talk about change, and talk about an abrupt stop to everything that you've had and dreamed about. And that's the kind of world that we live in. And it's frustrating when we're a part of it. It's sad when we know people that are a part of it. It's devastating when we see it for ourselves in the face, you know, when we face that ourselves. Is there anything good that can come out of that? That's the frustration. And why in the world would God allow things like that to happen? And we talked a little bit last week as we introduced this topic of where is God when it hurts, when bad things happen to us? Is God even there? You know, some atheists and agnostics use this as an argument for the non-existence of God. If there is a great God out there that is able to create the universe, and if he is ultimately good, but yet there's evil in the world, there's something wrong. Either he is good, but he doesn't have the power to stop it, and so therefore he's not God, or he has the power to stop it, but he doesn't, which means that he's not good, and therefore he is not God. That's the basic argument that atheists used against God. Logically, they think that it's impossible for a good God and a great God to allow suffering in the world. But philosophers have debated that for years and maybe for centuries. And just because we can't come up with an excuse or a reason why God allows that to take place, it doesn't mean that it's illogical. It just simply means that it bugs us. And it simply means that it's frustrating, especially when we experience ourselves. So today we want to kind of tackle this idea of maybe there's a reason why God allows it. I don't think God causes all pain and suffering, but he's definitely allowed it to take place in life. We've talked about last week how the world around us is broken. Sin is the cause of death and destruction and pain and suffering in the world. And we talked about that God has done something about that through his son Christ and come to deal with it. And through his suffering has come up with a remedy in order to deal with it. However, we're still in this broken world and we're still dealing with these things. Perhaps there's a reason why God has allowed it to take place. Perhaps there's a reason that we can't understand and can't wrap our intellect around that, in a sense, pain can be a blessing in disguise. That's what we're going to try to tackle today. The gift that no one wants, the gift of pain. And my thesis or my point today is this, that pain is not God's goof. As some said, God messed up, he goofed, but that it's actually a gift. Now, I also want to highlight that that doesn't mean when you're in the middle of this that Danny should stand up today and say, yay, 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 my wife has gone, woohoo, this is a great gift, thank you, Lord. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that perhaps if we can just for a moment think and open the door of the possibility that God allows these things to happen in this great big picture of life, not only in our life, but for generations, thousands, millions of years that have passed, or thousands of years that have passed for human beings, that somehow it's working towards a greater good and a benefit somewhere down the road. If we can just open up our mind to that a little bit, maybe that will help us deal with the issues that happen to us in life. And as you'll see, as we give some examples of pain in this world, that perhaps is a gift that we take for granted. Now, the information that I'm going to give you today comes out of a book called Where is God When It Hurts? That's where I stole the title, and it's written by Philip Yancey. I highly recommend this book. It is perhaps one of the best books that deals with pain and suffering from a Christian point of view. Philip Yancey, one of his first books that he wrote it in 1977, and then he updated it in 1990. In fact, I put the reference to it in the bottom of your insert there and encourage you. I'm going to order some books and have them available next week if I would have been smart, which I'm not, and if I would have been planning ahead, I would have had them for you today, so you could have picked them up today, but I'll order some if you'd like. And great book, easy to read. Yancey is a great Christian author. It's been around for years. He's written some wonderful books, but this one is one of his best that he wrote, one of his first ones, Where is God When It Hurts? And he has a couple sections in there about the benefits of pain. And so a lot of this information comes out of those two. I have to give him credit. It comes out of those two chapters. Some of it's verbatim. Some of it's just examples that I've taken out of there. But a lot of this comes out of that book. But I thought it was so interesting that it needs to be shared. Number one, because I know that not everybody likes to read. I have a friend of mine that says, I haven't read since college. And that was about 35 years ago. He hasn't read a book since college. Now, I love to read. I like to read two or three books a week if I can, or at least I'm reading a few of them. I don't get them all done in that week, but I love to read. But some of you don't, so I want you to get this information because I think it helps us wrap our minds around this idea of pain as a gift. So the pain network within, let's talk about pain within our bodies. We've all experienced that. You just take a hammer and hit your finger with it, and you'll firsthand have experience of pain. The pain network in our body is the most underappreciated bodily system that we have. There are many philosophical and theological books that have tried to deal with the problem of pain, but not many have tried to tackle the issue about pain as a gift. Pain in our bodies may serve some useful biological purposes. In fact, when you begin to see the intricate design of our bodies, it bears the mark of a creative genius. Consider the single organ from the human body, the skin, a flexible yet tough organ that stretches over the body's frame as an advance guard against the dangers of the outside world. When you think of skin, it is it's an organ. It's an amazing, amazing organ. Millions of pain sensors dot the surface of the skin, scattered not randomly, but in precise accord with the body's specific needs. Actually, the body does not seem to have any dedicated pain cells, for the sensation of pain is tied with an elaborate network of sensors that also report information about pressure, touch, heat, and cold. Scientists have tried to measure this sensitivity, skin sensitivity. For example, how much pressure must be applied to a blindfold person before they become aware that an object is touching their skin. The scale that they use is called the absolute threshold of touch, and it's measured in grams, which is per square millimeter of skin surface. So give me some of these numbers. I think we posted some of these. So this is when they try, how do you test this? But they test it, and this is what they find out. So they measure how much pressure it needs before you can sense it. So the tongue is the most sensitive with 2 grams of pressure. The second is your fingers. You know, you can feel a feather, and you can feel the texture. Like, you know, ladies or guys or gals that work in stores, they can feel counterfeit money just by how it feels. They're taught how to do that just from touching something. That's amazing. The back of your hand, 12 grams. The forearm, 33 grams of pressure. And the sole of the foot, which is 250 grams. So the skin, a single organ, displays a variety of range of sensitivity. That's just your skin. Isn't that amazing that all those different areas has all those different pressure points? We use our tongue for such intricate acts of forming words and then picking food particles out of our teeth. We use our fingers to play guitars, write with a pen, and then caress our loved one, scratching their backs or whatever you want to do. That's sensitivity. These areas of skin required a fine-tuned of sensitivity. But less critical areas hardly need such sensitivity. We would tire quickly, indeed, if our brains had to listen to the dainty pressures reported on our feet. You know, sometimes we do. The brain does register that. My feet just ache. I've been on them all day. But can you imagine if it was that sensitive, like the tip of the tongue? You know, like, all the time. That's what we'd feel like. So somehow or another, God's created that to take that pressure. And then when we step on a nail, for instance, it's going to register pretty quickly. Growing up on a farm, you figured that out quite quickly when you did something like that. So these less critical areas, they don't necessarily report like they're supposed to, so that it wouldn't overwhelm our brains. Thus, while the fingers and tongues can detect a feather touch, other parts of the body need a good sound slap before they report any unusual brain activity. Another test is called the absolute threshold of pain. And in this test, the scientists measure how much pressure must be applied to a very sharp, with a needle, before they start to feel pain. Now, the other is pressure sensitivity. This is pain. So the first one is the cornea. You know, I think that's a lot, because if there's a needle coming to my eye, I'm screaming in pain no matter what. But 0.2 grams, that's how sensitive your cornea is. The forearm is 20 grams. The back of the hand is 100. The sole of the foot, 200. And then isn't it interesting that the hand is one of the most sensitive as far as feeling pressure, but it takes a lot for it to cause pain, 300 grams. I just think that's fabulously interesting, if that's such a word. But I just made it up, so it is. It can detect 3 grams of pressure, but not until the pressure exceeds 300 grams will I feel pain in my fingers. Now think about the fingers' activity. A concert violinist must sense the amazing range of pressure to produce the perfect sound and volume. A skilled baker swishing his hands back and forth through batches of dough. John's not here today. He's our baker. We could have asked him about this. But he can sense the stickiness of it, if it's ready to go in or not, or if he needs to add flour to it. Cloth feelers in textile industries compare the quality of clothes. They still use their fingers to make sure that it's coming out in a quality way. But sensitivity to touch is not enough. The fingertips must also be tough enough to withstand rigorous activity. So the calloused hand of a carpenter or a farmer or a professional tennis player. Life would be miserable indeed if the fingertips fired a message of pain to the brain each time a person squeezed a tennis racket or pounded a hammer. So the design of the body includes a fingertip extraordinarily sensitive to pressure, but relatively insensitive to pain. My only question about that is, why is it that in the winter, when you get cracks right by your fingertips, that you go crying in your bed? At least I do, because it hurts so doggone much. But see, what happens is it goes between the skin and underneath the skin. And then that opens the door to paint. But don't you get those little cracks and they just drive you nuts and they hurt like crazy. Now, the cornea of the eye, however, has a different existence due to its transparency, which is essential so that it emits light in so that we can see. It has a limited blood supply and there is very, very fragile. That is why a piece of dust can put you down on your knees when it's in your eye. You know, World Series game or baseball games are stopped because an eyelash is in the pitcher's eye. That's how sensitive it is to pain. So those are the external organs, and our skin is the first defense system to tell us if there's something poking us, that there's danger coming, and then it sends signals to our brain. It says, ouch, that I need to be careful about that, right? But there's also the pain system in internal organs, which is really quite interesting as well. The body's internal organs possesses a unique set of pain receptors specific to the dangers that they face. Inside, the body presents even more evidence of the pain's networks of intelligent design. Pinpricks and heat burns, the scientists' favorite techniques for measuring pain on the surface of the skin, they're sick, but it works, prove useless on internal organs, which simply do not respond to this stimuli. Since the body has designated the skin to sort through alarms from cuts and burns and pressures, internal organs can get along without such an elaborate warning system. So slip past the skin's defenses with an aid of a local anesthetic, and you can burn the stomach with a match, insert a needle through the lung, cut the brain with a knife, crush a kidney in a vise, or bore a hole through a bone, all without causing the patient any discomfort. Such internal pain signals would be redundant. The skin and the skeleton already protect the internal organs from such dangers. But instead, the body's sheltered organs possess a unique sets of pain receptors specific to the dangers they face. For instance, if you stick a balloon in a person's stomach and it fill it with air, the body automatically responds and says something's going on. You got colic or you have gas. But it's a different kind of sensor, see? It's a sensor that's related to the processes that's a part of. I think that's just intriguing as well, that in the DNA design of our bodies, it's meant to do what it's supposed to do. It's meant to function in its purpose. Likewise, the kidney sends out an excruciating pain when there's a little BB-sized little thing in there that's not supposed to be in there. You know, lining in the joints, which are insensitive to needles or a knife, are very sensitive to chemical changes. On rare occasions, an internal organ must inform the brain of an emergency that its pain sensors cannot do. So what it does is it borrows the pain sensors from other things that are close around it, which is remarkable as well. For example, heart attack victims may notice a burning or a constricting feeling in their neck, their chest, or their jaw and their left hand. And what it is hey, you're having a heart attack. You can't feel it in your heart, but it sends signals out to the other parts of your brain to warn your body that something is happening. You know, skin cells there, though perfectly healthy, obligingly send off alarm messages to the brain that there's something going on, when the fact of the problem lies in the neighboring heart. Anyone that's ever eaten homemade ice cream, you know, first thing you think is, why in the world does my head hurt? The ice cream is going down here. But what the ice cream, what the stomach does is it borrows some of the nerves from down here and it sends it up to our brain saying, hey man, it's cold down here. Knock off the ice cream stuff. And it gives you an ice cream headache. I just think that's fascinating how body parts borrow from others. You know, the spleen, they said it's hard for when you're trying to diagnose things. I'm not a doctor, but I do play one on TV, as they say. No, I don't. But the mystery, it's called referred pain, and they can make some challenging medical diagnosis. For instance, spleen injuries, sometimes they have to find that at the top of their shoulder, that it sends a signal up here. A damaged appendix borrows from around your midsection. I've had that appendix before. I had chicken pox when I was 21 years old, and I had the appendix out at the same time. The chicken pox were a lot worse. When you walk into the doctor's office, and he has this, this is on the side, when he walks into the doctor, because I went home, I had these big, huge blotches in my mouth and my nose, and they were huge. So when the doctor walks in, he's looking down and he comes up and he looks at it and he goes, oh my, that's what he says. That's not a good thing. If you're practicing to be a doctor, don't say, oh my, when they look at you, okay? That's how bad it was, 103 temperature straight for about 3 to 4 days. And then I woke up one morning and had this pain in my stomach. I'm going, what in the world? That doesn't feel right. So I go to the school nurse. This is when I was at Southwest State University. And she was poking around, and she goes, oh, I think it's just gas. And I go, it ain't gas. It's not gas. So I was walking in the hallway, just going, and I was out for track at that time. So I went to my track coach, Harry Jones, and I go, Coach, I said, man, I just got a weird stomach ache. Didn't hurt. It's just weird. And he pokes on it. Like they do the test, you poke and then you let go and then it pulls. I go, ow. He goes, that's your appendix. Really? I said, yeah. So I drove home about an hour and they took it out later that afternoon. So, but that pain was what. So it borrows pain. Sorry for those stories, but I think they're kind of interesting. That pain, it borrows that pain from in here. I just think that's interesting as well, how that all happens. Each of these demonstrate how the body's backup system cooperates to warn a possibility. You know, we can go on and on and on. We have nurses and some docs in here, and they can tell us about that as well. There's a gentleman that Philip Yancey interviewed for this, and this information came out of this book. And his name is Dr. Paul Brand. And he's a renowned researcher on pain and one of the world's foremost experts on leprosy. A disease which really is of the nervous system. We think of leprosy as being, I don't know, it looks like a virus or something attacks the skin so that it falls off. But it really, it's about your nerves are damaged and you can't feel anything. And then you hurt yourself in that way. So he's an expert on pain. And this is what he says. He says, thank God for inventing pain. I don't think he could have done a better job. It's beautiful. Now, I started with that. Going like, is the dude nuts or what? Anybody that studies pain, he's probably a little bit nuts. He says it's beautiful how he's created it. And let me explain. The devastating, there's a couple of different diseases that really affect our bodies, and Dr. Brand had studied these. Leprosy is one of them. They lose sensation, and they end up losing the sense of pain. Diabetes can do this to the extreme, to your limbs as well. And so, like for lepers, when you go to lepers, you know, I remember seeing TV shows with lepers, and they're covered up with, cloth and so on and so forth, so you can't see them. Their hands are like stubs. And in their studies, they were trying to figure out what was happening. What they found out was that when they lose sensation, a leper could be, you know, cutting a tomato and not realize that his finger is there, and then cut the finger right off. They can't feel it. And so that's what happens. That's why they're so banged up, and that's why they lose part. They can't feel a touch of a, you know, he gives an example of he was trying to turn this key, and the lock was really hard, and this little 12-year-old boy comes up and goes, I'll do that, doctor. And he turns it, and he opens the door, and he goes, how do you do that? He goes, well, I don't know. I just turned it. But he looked at his hand, and it was bleeding. He can't feel that pressure, and there's no pain to tell him not to do that. And he just kept torquing on it until it opened up, but he hurt himself. That's what happens in leprosy. It could be, you know, up here they scratch their ear too much, or they bunk into something, they hit their knee in something, and they don't know that it's hurt. And then it gets infected and so on and so forth. So he studied that over and over again. There's also, that's leprosy, and there's maybe some other things that cause lack of pain. But there's one that's a very rare condition called the congenital indifference to pain. In fact, Carrie, my wife, just found an article about a month ago from one of the papers up in the cities about a boy that has it in Big Lake, Minnesota. A child that has it in a girl, actually, I think it is, in Big Lake, Minnesota. There's rare. It's about 100, and they even mention this in the article. It says this in the book, about 100 cases in the world. Out of 6 to 7 billion people, there's 100 people that have this rare defect, and that is they cannot feel pain. And they start noticing that with babies when they start biting their fingers off. And they gave an example of that they... of a little baby that they came in, and the baby was just laughing. And this is really gross, but they're laughing, and the parents came in to find out what, and here she was biting her fingers, and she was bleeding, but she thought it was really fun. And the parents said, no, 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 like that. Well, she thought, you know how some kids do when you get a big reaction? She kept doing it because they'd get a big reaction. So they had to wrap her hands. There's one girl that says that had this case that got so mad that she went and pulled out 9 of her teeth at her parents because they told her that she couldn't do something, and she pulled them out. She can't feel anything. And so it's this horrible disease. What happens with it is that they literally can't feel. This girl that Carrie was, she just read it to me yesterday, she scratched her eye out She can't feel it, and she scratched her cornea. So she has to wear goggles. She has a help. She's in school, and she has a helper that watches her wherever she goes, because if she bunks into something, she can't know if she broke her leg. Or she doesn't know if she bit her tongue when she's eating. Horrible disease. Horrible disease. Very, 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 very rare. You know, they couldn't tell if they are having an aneurysm. They can't tell if they have a heart attack because they can't feel any pain. So Dr. Brand did a lot of research in this area, and he tried to come up, since some people say this is... They tried to come up with something that could try to help these people with leprosy and these diseases that would give them senses of pain. And so he got some of the very important people, some very smart people. He used three professors of electronic engineering, a bioengineer, and several research biochemists, and they tried to come up with a device, especially since we use our hands so much, and that's where a lot of the pain comes from, or a lot of the devastation comes from. They came up with a device like a glove that they could put on that could help them sense pain. And they had all these little sensors. Each little sensor is about $400. This is back in the 70s and 80s, $400 a piece. And what it would do is they would try to regulate it to the point so that it could feel picking up things. And they had this unbelievable task that it had to feel in order to pick up something so they can hold it, but at the same sense, it had to feel so that it could feel a pinprick or maybe touching a rose that would cause you to hurt. And so they had to design something like that to try to get that to work in that manner. And so they tried a number of different things. I'm trying to think here how they would go. What would happen is that they had to program something that would let the person know when to stop doing something. And so they tried a buzzer sound. So when they would hold something, and if it registered too much pressure, then a buzzer would go off. And what they found out was that didn't stop a person from doing it. That if they wanted to get something done, say rake the yard, but the buzzer was going off, they would shut the buzzer off and keep raking their yard, and then they would hurt their hand. So then they had to do flashing lights. They tried that to see if that would... And they found out that they had to do something that caused pain to get them to stop. And so they inserted... they'd put electrodes underneath the sensitive areas of their body, if they had any sensitive areas left. So under the armpit was one of them. And so it would register something. If they were picking up something that was dangerous for them, that it would send a shock to them. And Dr. Brand said that worked to a point, but then even the most intelligent of the people would shut that pain off because it was discomfort, and they would still go ahead and hurt themselves because they didn't want to. So here's the point, and I summed up a lot of information there. So they did research. They tried to come up with this system to help people feel pain. What they found out was it cost a gazillion dollars. And secondly, it always broke down. It never lasted. And he says, this gives me an incredible amount of excitement about our skin and how durable it is. You know, this one right here has lasted 47 years. I've had this for 47 years right here. Look at that, still does it. I'm very quick too, see? I haven't lost any quickness at all. 47 years right there, folks. Right? That's amazing to me. When we think about it, we take these things for granted. They could not do it. They had to quit the program, and they couldn't come up with it. And then he found out, the other thing he says is, so I thank God for skin, and he says, I also thank God that he put pain out of our reach, because we would turn it off even if it was going to hurt us. See, that's in his research he found that. Isn't that interesting? So what's the point of that? A system called God's Great Mistake was too complex for even the most sophisticated technology to mimic. And that's why Dr. Brand says, thank God for pain. By definition, pain is unpleasant enough to force us to withdraw a finger on a hot stove. Yet that very quality saves us from destruction. Unless the warning signal demands a response, we might not heed it. And then Philip Yancey writes, so pain is not unpleasantness to be avoided at all costs. In a thousand ways, large and small, pain serves us each day, making possible normal life on this planet. If we are healthy, pain cells alert us when we go to the bathroom, when we change shoes, when to change shoes, when to lose the grip on a mop handle or rake, and when to blink. without pain, we would live lives of paranoia, defenselessness against unfelt dangers. Now, I would add to that, that's healthy pain. I would also add that not only is it bad that you don't feel pain at all, but we also have a broken down system where people feel pain constantly. If you have arthritis, those people suffer, and that's our pain system out of whack. David Booth, who's back there, his wife Phyllis, has constant pain in her face, so hard or so much so that she had to have open brain surgery to try to get a hold of it, but she has it constantly in her face. So I, by all means, are not saying that you should rejoice in all kinds of pain. What I'm just trying to introduce to you is this idea that perhaps, if God has built something into our bodies that can help us and give us warning, perhaps, maybe in life, that's why he allows it. So here's the life application for this, okay? First thing is that God's creation, including ourselves, is incredibly complex. We have to acknowledge that. We're not going to figure it all out. We think we have so many smart people that think they make these great big things. There is no God. Well, how do you know there's no God? You don't have all the information in the world to make that decision. That's why it's better to be an agnostic. Agnostic says we just don't know. That's better. That's a better position. And philosophically, you can argue that position much better than you can there is no God. But we also know that the world is highly complex and our bodies are highly complex. And God has created them in such a way that we're not going to understand all of it and how it all fits together. Psalms 139 verse 14, the psalmist says, I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. He's talking about how God created him and made him who he was. But he just thanks God for how complex we are. But we're very complex. Not only our bodies, but the world around us is complex. We're never going to solve everything around us. Second thing, God has a purpose for everything he created or allowed to be part of creation. You know, he's created natural laws, but he's also created spiritual laws. Those laws are not meant to be broken. We can try to break the spiritual law or the natural law of gravity. You can jump out a window and say, I'm free, I'm flying. And about halfway down, someone yells out, how's it going? And someone would say, so far, so good, until you hit the bottom. You can't break that law. And there's some spiritual laws that we can't break as well. I talked about that last week, how sin, the devastating effects of sin. And when we read in the Bible about things that we should stay away from and things that we should do and shouldn't do, we just kind of write God off as some God that he just doesn't understand, so we go ahead and do that. But it destroys, we can't break those spiritual laws. It destroys relationships, it destroys lots of things around us. God's created ecosystems. We know what happens when we take things out of the ecosystem. You know, people are talking about the pythons and the constrictors down in Florida. When people release them into the open, they buy them as a pet, number one. Question buying snakes as a pet. Number two, then they release them out in the wild like nothing's going to happen, but they're breeding so far. They're ruining the ecosystem in Florida. So they have a hunting season on these snakes now. So ecosystems are very, very, there's a purpose for them, and when we mess with them, they can ruin that. Our human bodies and its systems have a purpose for them. And human relationships, I would argue, have a purpose for them. Whenever we mess with God's plan for human relationships, we're messing with things that should not be messed with. Proverbs 16:4, the Lord works out everything for his own end. He has a purpose. And therefore, I look at it, there's a purpose for allowing suffering to take place. There's not a purpose. What happens is, I can't give you an example why Danny's wife had to die on Monday. I cannot explain that. I just know that the world is broken. And that's where our frustration comes. Why did it happen to me and my family? But I have to step back and look at all of humankind and the world in general, and I just have to trust that God sees this great big picture, and he hates it just as much as we hate it, but he's allowing it to take place because somehow or another, it's getting us to the goal. It's moving us towards the goal. And that's the third thing. If pain has a purpose and is a benefit to our bodies, perhaps it can also have a purpose and be a benefit in our lives. Pain is our body's great warning gauge. It warns us physically that we couldn't do some things. You know, pain even warns us financially. There's consequences to our decisions, and there's pain involved with that. And that, so that warns us that we got to be careful about our finances. It warms us relationally. When we get into the wrong relationship, there's a lot of pain and suffering in that relationship. It warns us that that is not maybe the right relationship, or this relationship isn't going where it should be, or that we need to make changes in that relationship. And it warns us spiritually. When we are far from God, we suffer from that. It tells us that we need to make changes. It tells us that we need to stay away. It tells us that we need to refocus our purpose. You know, is there evidence in the world around us that pain is a benefit? Or allowing pain is a benefit. And there is all over. And I'll give one example of it. We don't have a lot of time, but we can give a lot of examples of that. But Brandon, when he was little, had his appendix get hurt and got sick. And we didn't figure this out until he refused to walk. And we're going like, well, he was very typically kind of a energetic little guy. How old was he, Carrie? 5, 6 years old. But he would sit on the couch and he refused to walk. He would go like this. He'd go, is something wrong with his leg? No, we took him in and it was in his appendix, little guy. So we had to take him in there and they took his appendix out and they brought him to the room. And it had opened up a little bit, so they wanted to give him lots and lots of antibiotics to make sure that he didn't get sick. But in order for that to take place, they had to take his blood about every hour to make sure that his levels weren't going to hurt his liver. And after one time or two times, Brandon refused. I don't like to give blood either. And so they asked me, can you hold him down? Because he's screaming. Can you hold him down so that we can take blood? And I had to lay over the top of him and hold his arm down so it wouldn't hurt him. And he would yell at me, no, Daddy, no, Daddy, no, Daddy, right in my ear as I'm holding him down, knowing that the pain that he would have a little bit was going to help him get healthy. And I had to do that. And I think kids make you appreciate God a lot more. And I can imagine God watching all these people suffer. And I got to do this because in the long run, there's going to be something that's going to be great. But you got to trust me on this. And I can't stand it either. So yes, the world around us says that there's pain that will bring a benefit later on in life. In Romans 8, verse 22 through 25, Paul says, I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that's going to be revealed to us. The creation waits in eager expectation for the sons of God to be revealed, for God to finally take his people with him. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself would be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the glorious freedom of the children of God. There's going to be a moment of time when there's going to be suffering and pain, but if we can look to the end, it's going to be liberated. But even creation itself is crying out, Lord, come quickly. We know that the whole creation has been groaning, as in the pains of childbirth, right up to the present time. I've never had a baby. I've made 4. But my understanding is it's not very pleasant. And so here creation is in suffering. Not only so, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit grown inwardly as we wait eagerly for the adoptions as sons. That means for the end, for God to come and take us to be with him. The redemption of our bodies, that we're going to be restored with new bodies that aren't going to go through that junk that we are going through right now. For in this hope we are saved. But hope that is seen is not hope, is no hope at all. Who hopes for what he already has? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. It's all about looking to the future. Hold on, Paul says. You're going to go through crud in life, and it's not going to feel very well. But hold on, because there's a day coming when God's going to redeem everything, your bodies, the creation, the earth itself. There's a bigger purpose. If you could just hold on, you need to trust the Lord. And it's not any fun. It doesn't, again, you don't go around clapping your hands. Yoo-hoo! Look at what I'm suffering. But he just says, just hold on, because in the end, something's coming. That's why Philip Yancey writes, pain is not an afterthought or God's great goof. Rather, it reveals a marvelous design that serves our body well. And if pain in our body serves us well, perhaps, I want you just to open that possibility. Perhaps it serves us well in life, even though it's not very fun. That's why James says in James 1, verse 17, every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. Maybe pain is a gift. It's a gift that no one wants to have, but it's a gift. Let's pray. Lord, first I want to thank you for Mr. Yancey and his research, and for Dr. Brand and his research that teaches so much about pain and suffering. And Lord, you know, none of us want to go through that. None of us want to experience like Danny's experiencing this week, especially now after yesterday when all the family goes home and now he's got to go back to that house with his two boys and they feel that loneliness and that emptiness. That pain is awfully hard to explain. We can't explain it. We can't. We can't go back and explain the why. But all we can do is point to what's next and the hope that we have. And that's what helps us endure through these tragedies that we experience in life. And we know because of the bodies that we have that pain can serve as a positive to warn us of some of the things that are happening that aren't good for us. And perhaps it's a warning that this world isn't good for us. And it keeps us away from falling in love with it and then falling away from you. I think that's ultimately what it serves. It reminds us that it's a broken world and that we need you in our life. So Lord, help us give thanks for pain, but then also help to encourage others in the middle of their pain. It's not easy. It's hard for us to understand it because we can't see. We don't know all those things. But we're going to have to trust you, Lord, and I pray that you help us do so. We pray this in your name. Amen.